From my understanding of editorial policy, which is a role limited given my background, what it involves is independence primarily, is that editorial policy must be independent. It's about ensuring that the news and any broadcasts are free from any influence, that people who watch it derive some sort of educational, informative benefit having watched a particular news segment or particular program, and that editorial policy should also be something that is not just from one particular person, but that is arrived at with due regard for the requirements in the Broadcasting Act and its, and as well as the Charter, as well as involvement of those who are in fact, I would say the executive as well as senior managers, and that board members are involved primarily in looking at the editorial policy, reviewing it regularly, and receiving information from those who it applies to, those who operate within that policy, receiving some sort of feedback around it.
Can
you also share with the committee maybe two or three points, your knowledge of the government imperatives as prescribed for the board members in the charter?
Okay, so in terms of the government imperatives, in terms of the charter, the board members are required to operate within the parameters of that charter. They are required to ensure financial integrity, I guess, first and foremost, that there are internal controls and mechanisms that work effectively, that are efficient, that are reviewed regularly, that also in terms of the charter, that as a public broadcaster, the kinds of programming that you have speak to the general public. So beyond editorial policy, there are other types of policies which would need to be, I guess, overseen by the board, or not necessarily implemented, but overseen, that take into account gender issues, that take into account issues of equality, that take into account issues for people with disabilities. So the charter, in as much as it speaks to financial controls and administrative requirements, also speaks to what the role of the public broadcaster is. That is more than just commercial imperatives. And from a governance perspective, the charter is then also supplemented by the PSMA requirements and other requirements in the Companies Act. I hope that answers your question.
Maybe in the minute in the end you are having, would you say something about your understanding of the significance of the fiduciary duty?
Okay, so fiduciary duties, I alluded to some of them at the very beginning from the TFMA. It really is underpinned by fidelity, honesty, and integrity of all affairs relating to the governance of the board. It really is underpinned by this. Whether you are looking at audit or risk or internal control mechanisms, you need to have those as your very basis, as well as independence. You need to make sure that processes work. In this particular context, and looking at some of the challenges that the SABC has faced, processes are at the heart of what needs to happen in order to ensure that governance is in fact achieved, not just reported in a favorable light, but it is actually achieved. And those kinds of processes are absolutely paramount. In one of the judgments relating to SACLA in 2014, the Constitutional Court said that where there are procurement irregularities, these are red flags for procurement, I mean for corruption.
Thank you very much. Honorable
morning, Ms. Ian Coffin-Sam. Just your earlier mentioned function of the same mistake.
Okay, as I mentioned, the Broadcasting Act, I've mentioned the DSMA as well as the Company Act. We've got the ICASA Act and the regulations, the Electronic Communications Act. We've got the Media Diversity, the MDDA Act, and the, I think it's the Brand Trust Act. Those are, I guess, not directly, those don't always directly implicate the work of the SABC, but certainly they are, I guess, provisions that may cross over.
In your opinion, as you have mentioned, including the Broadcasting Act, which one governs and supersedes the compared to others? And just to finish, Chair, there are also, SABC in this cooperation is also governed by some codes which are used in governing business and other things like that. Mm-hmm. Which are those codes? And besides that, there are some other documents which govern the relationship between the minister, the board, the executive there. And there is a framework which they are working on, which are those.
Okay, so the primary legislation that implicates the SABC is the Broadcasting Act. It's the most specific legislation and deals with its operations more specifically. Also, in terms of the relationship between the shareholder representative and the board, is the Memorandum of Incorporation, as is the company, and other applicable rules and regulations that stem from the application of the CFMA would be the supply chain management, regulations and rules, treasury guidelines, treasury circulars, and the SABC charter, which is derived from the Broadcasting Act, also applies in terms of governance.
As I'm sure you have been following what was happening and what have been the recommendations, specifically around the issues of irregular and wasteful expense, which act governs how officials, especially executives, how they must actually avoid that, and what are the penalties.
So in terms of the board's role in relation to irregular expenditure and then some of the delegated authority that would be used by the CEO and other executives, irregular expenditure is primarily governed by the TFMA, and you've got the TFMA and regulations, I think, in terms of Section 76 of the TFMA. So you've got the fiduciary duties, which are overarching, I think it's Section 51 and 52 of the TFMA, but you've also got the treasury regulations, which specify and are applicable to a Schedule 2 entity, I think, in some circumstances and in others not. But around irregular expenditure, primarily those regulations, and some of the penalties from a board perspective would be if you don't exercise your fiduciary duties in accordance with Section 51, you can be criminally charged. It's a criminal, the legislative criminal offense to not adhere to your fiduciary duties.
Thank you very much. Robert?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for the very important oversight.
we also cannot, as a new board, you cannot try to reinvent the wheel. You've got to look at what the internal board has already done. And from what I understand, they've already gone some way in implementing some of those recommendations. And they've, I think, worked quite hard to try and implement them in a way so as to ensure that the new board almost has a fresh start. But as a turnaround strategy, the first port of call we need to speak to the most pressing issues at the SABC. And these would relate to policies and controls. On the one hand, we've had a situation where there are policies and regulations that have been in place that have been completely ignored. And that is something that has been addressed to the work of this committee, to the work of the ad hoc committee in terms of holding those individuals accountable for completely disregarding those policies. On the other hand, there seems to be considerable confusion around the MOI, the manner in which it's been amended or has not been amended, around particular policies, around remuneration, and those need to be clarified. Those need to be clarified urgently. The review of the supply chain management system is at the core of the issues facing the SABC, and I think that that is what I would bring to the board in that respect, because of my SCM knowledge, both at a minute level and at an overarching level. I think those are that's the most pressing thing at this moment, and it brings me to an important point. It's about setting priorities. You know, you need to prioritize the work that needs to be done. It needs to be rolled out in a fashion that is practical, that is effective, that involves everyone. I think at the moment you've got executives, you've got senior managers, you've got maybe board members who could, older board members who could be in new boards that have been largely left out a bit in moving the institution forward. And that's why inclusiveness in implementing any strategy is going to be so important going forward. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot for the new board to learn about. And that's important. Being able to listen, being able to learn, analyze what's already in place, what needs to be done, and taking tough and difficult decisions after having conducted that analysis is going to be important for a turnaround strategy.
Can you, I hear your strength from the SEM and so on, but can you specifically on the background that we have? Because beyond that, there's a lot of issues with the education department, a lot of issues with diversity. Can you take us through on the kind of experience that for SEM, especially the turnaround on why we have been the recommendation?
Okay.
So my background in terms of the supply chain management processes have been primarily around administrative law review, so the review applications that we've brought to court that I've been involved in, both at the law firm that I was at as well as at Corruption Watch. So looking at the ways in which a decision was taken and whether or not certain decisions could be reviewable, bearing in mind certain, administrative law principles, as well as looking very specifically at the roles of the adjudication committees, evaluation committees, whether they followed processes, whether they have adhered to also changes. Because I think a huge problem facing a lot of the SCM practitioners is that there's a lot of changes in treasury regulations and treasury circulars. And they often are, not the most well-informed around being able to implement that, which brings me to the point about training. Training of SCM practitioners in that changing environment is something that is quite essential. Not sure how much time I have. So that is my background, but I also have a media law background, where as one of our clients in the newspaper would come to us with a defamation suit had been lodged against them, or when they needed to appear before the press ombudsman. as well as the Corruption Watch, looking at articles, vetting those articles, looking at whether, you know, any information that is published is fair, is true, and in the public interest, making sure that those who you publish information about have the due rights to respond, to reply, and that there's fair and balanced reporting at all times.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Honourable Pamela?
Thank you, and thanks for making yourself available. I think you've got great experience in the legal sector, you've experience in labor law, drafting, litigation, drafting, procurement law, media law, which is all great. And what's a little bit lacking for me is board experience. Why the SABC board? I mean, you know that it's been badly managed. Being on the SABC board is going to be extremely tough. There's a lot of public pressure, there's a lot of work to do. You've got no board experience. Why pick the SABC board to be where you get your board experience?
Okay, I think that's a really important question because, and I know that I haven't entered into this particular space before, but this is also, I guess, a good thing in the sense that I don't come with any kind of pre-existing notions of how I should behave or any authoritarian kind of approaches to doing things. I bring a fresh perspective. I bring a perspective that is heavily grounded in following the rules and administrative prescripts. And I think that this is a challenge, yes, but it's a challenge that I want to take on because of the other types of experience that I bring. Everyone who would be convening to form part of the board brings their own life, educational work experience to the board that is going to be used in order to form the best possible governance unit. And that's the kind of experience that I would ideally bring.
But why the SABC in particular? Why do you want to work at the SABC board and not say ESCOM or any other entity? Why the SABC?
Okay, so for a long time, I've always seen the SABC as having such amazing potential to make a real difference in ordinary people's lives. And I know that sounds a cliche, but it really does. It really does in terms of its programming, in terms of its reach, radio listenership, television listenership. There's just so much that can be done. And when you sit on the outskirts of a small society, and you can't just complain and you can't just be passive and say, oh, let somebody else do the job. You know, sometimes you've got to be able to step up and say, I want to be part of that change. Let me step forward and be given the opportunity to bring that change. And that's why, for me, it's the SABC. Just looking at its mandate, just looking at what it's providing for the Broadcasting Act and seeing that it comes largely, I think, unrealized maybe for ordinary people, it's frustrating. And I genuinely would want to be a part of that change because it's so much more than just broadcasting information. If you look at the Broadcasting Act, it speaks to achieving democratic, the realization of democratic, how can I say this, rules or policies. And that for me is really important. You know, it's about taking into account other people as well and how they respond to particular news and being able to interact. The use of social media, for example, interacting with listeners or viewers, being able to tap into technology, those are all things that I don't necessarily have work or particular experience in, but things that I can definitely bring to the board as well.
The SABC's editorial policy is currently out for public comments. Looking at that document, what would you change in the editorial policy to improve the manner in which the SABC does its business?
Okay, so I think, first off, you know, when it comes to documents that are in public circulation and that are there for public comment, one of the issues that, you know, being involved in legislative process more generally, one of the things that makes it so difficult is how people respond to and interact with the vegan policy. I think that this is a real problem because at the moment we have information that is distributed by the government to say, yes, there are advertisements in many newspapers about things that are out of public comment. But to me, it really doesn't always appear that there's sufficient outreach to people in order to enable them to comment. And not just comment, interact with a particular policy, because if you don't have pre-existing knowledge about a field, you don't see how the issues are relevant to you. You don't see how you can make a comment that is relevant to what you would want to see. So breaking that down, not just publishing a particular policy and say, please comment, and being able to have a decent document of your memorandum of those objectives, and having it in very simple language is one of the things that I think is probably quite important. And aside from that...
Thank you very much. Now, ladies.
Thank you, Chair. I have three questions. Can I ask them in succession, or should I...
For as long as the panel is put down the question.
Okay. Thank you very much for making yourself available for these interviews. My first question is around freedom of expression and your views on freedom of the press. There are some people who say that the print media is biased against the government and that it's always reporting on corruption and scandal, either because it's politically biased or because it's just trying to sell newspapers. Do you agree that it is the role of the public broadcaster to compensate for this negative reporting about the government and to try and find some balance in our media space? Do you think that that is the role of the public broadcaster? My second question is about the legal framework of the SABC. Now, the SABC is a creature of statute. It's governed by the Broadcasting Act as well as the Companies Act. Which piece of legislation, in your view, should supersede the other when it comes to the public broadcaster? I mean, which piece of legislation out of the Broadcasting Act and the Companies Act do you think is paramount and why when dealing with the SABC? Then my last question is about the conduct that we've seen by various high-ranking officials at the SABC over the last few years. Now, if you had been on the SABC board when the public protector found that the chief operations officer, Harvey Montsouneng, had lied about his qualifications, had artificially inflated his salary, had bullied and intimidated journalists, and other staff members of the SABC. If you were on the board when that public protection report was made public, what would you have done as a board member, and how would you have stood up to a minister who refused to act on the public protector's recommendations? Thank you.
If that question is not very clear, what does you reply? You have heard to check.
Okay, thank you, Honourable David. On the freedom of expression question, freedom of expression and all rights in our constitution are based on or need to be balanced. And that kind of balance is what I would advance for any broadcaster, for any publication, is that there needs to be free, fair and balanced publishing of information. So I would not say that a particular institution needs to advance any particular agenda, but I think that there are prescripts under which they need to operate, that there are constitutional prescripts, and that these should apply irrespective of what the publication is. On the Broadcasting versus the Companies Act, from my understanding, the Broadcasting Act would apply as the primary legislation because it is the most specific legislation, whereas the Companies Act almost supplements that. And so that I would say that the Broadcasting Act is paramount to answer that question. And then the conduct of various members. So when any particular report, or let's even call it a report or an allegation, or anything arises in relation to the conduct of executives, or even you know, ordinary employees on a day-to-day basis, the first thing that you would do is give a person a chance to respond, and a chance to, in order to ventilate the issues, in order to ensure that there's fairness, and if there's a necessity to conduct some sort of inquiry out of that response, then that needs to be done, and then to make a decision, having considered all the facts, all the information that is at your disposal, or that you can obtain, to make the most appropriate decision in those circumstances. So I would follow the ordinary rules that would apply in respect to anyone who faces allegations. And I think that is really important, is that once you start straying from those rules and acting outside of your mandate, then others can as well. Around the question about standing up to the minister, you know, ultimately you need to look at what the role is, the roles of the various players are. You've got this committee, you've got the minister as the sole shareholder, shareholder representative, you've got the board, you've got executives, and the minister's role, as far as I can see from the various documents, is one that is performance-based. You conclude a shareholder's compact, you follow that shareholder's compact. There should be very limited interference. So it's about, yes, standing up to anything that goes beyond what is prescribed in terms of the minister's conduct. And if that doesn't work, then elevating those concerns. Because I think that as a board, you can only go so far in terms of saying, look, we cannot do this X, Y, and Z, and then if you are forced into it, or meetings are not curious, then it needs to be raised with the committee, as like this one.
That is the last question.
Yes. Oh. So that would be my response, is to follow processes and make sure that they are fair.
Thank you very much. Another
question? Thank you, Chair. This is Colin. The number of questions, I hope it will be within the 5 minutes so prescribed. One, though you are a very strong person when it comes to the legal practice, etc., I've not heard you put to the committee the required media expertise. Except when you cited the fact that you represented a person in court. Okay. So that to me is a challenge, something that I would like to hear from you. I made that to the Broadcasting Act in Section 13.42b. Where it says that the persons who are committed to fairness, freedom of expression, the rights of the public to be informed, etc., etc., etc. So I think unless you saw the point, I think there is a problem. Thinking and experiencing, or having an experience, you'll agree with me, that is a problem. Are you able to explain?
Okay, thank you, Honorable Manisha. I think around the media expertise, the expertise that I have is around media law and around representing a variety of clients in respect of them defending either defamation suits or assisting in other media-related matters. I also don't think that it's a negative thing that I am strong on certain aspects, but I don't necessarily have the kind of media broadcasting, I would also say programming or even editorial kind of experience, because this is what a board, this is the reason why there are so many different types of people on a board. It's so that everyone's experience is used in a manner that is that speaks to their own skill set. And that's the reason also you have subcommittees that are made up of various professionals with certain expertise in order to do some of the more, I guess, say, operational work, and who then complement each other. I also understand that there's an FABC advisory board that would advise, not a board, but a committee that would advise the board on issues around programming, around those kinds of policies. I would never venture so far to say that I am an expert in the kind of media-related matters that you speak of, but I bring a particular skill set that I think could complement others on the board. If you look at the other candidates, they have that kind of experience, and they could complement in conducting the work of the board. So I don't necessarily think it's a negative thing. You want to find strong people in each of the different skill sets that can work together effectively and can work together efficiently. And to me, that's a good thing. And in terms of my lack of experience, like I was saying to Honorable Van Damme, it's about being able to find people who have the commitment and the integrity. Licenses would be able to show people that there is reason to pay, that there is programming, that they have good kids, educational programs, and that kind of thing. So I think it's multifaceted. It speaks to both processes and collection methods, as well as how the SADC is viewed as well.
The last one would be in the advent of the digital terrestrial television, DVT. What do you think the role of the public broadcaster is? Public broadcaster being a DVT.
From what I can understand around the DTT process, it's really a process of moving from one kind of digital format to another. And I understand that the SADC, or within communications more generally, that there's a move to ensuring, I think it's from an analog to a, I forget the next one, but it's just a movement of format that would enable, that would require people to buy a decoder, essentially, if that is, that's how I understand it to be. And I mean, the role for me is quite clear, is that the SADC has to be part of progress towards new technologies that would either improve broadcasting, or even if it changes the way in which broadcasting is done, it needs to be part of those processes and keep on track with any technological development.
Thank you very much. I will follow up I'll take 111. I'm sorry, I'm not saying what I mean. 111. Honorable Teddy? 5 minutes.
Good morning, Ms. Government. What in your view should be the relationship between the SABC and the regulator? If you can as well share with us the current leader, state of affairs, and if appointed a board member, in what ways will you assist in improving this current state of affairs?
I think at the heart of any institution that fall under communications, or I guess any portfolio really, is cooperation. And it's about being able to realize the individual mandate. So if you look at the regulator and look at the work that it's trying to do, it has its work that is described in its legislation. And you've got the SADC, which has a different mandate, but they all speak to one another. And both entities need to cooperate in respect of any overlap and need to... So when it comes to regulation around policies, for example, certain policies or certain content, there needs to be open dialogue and there needs to be cooperation around understanding each other, even though mandates may be slightly different. I hope I'm answering.
What should the funding model of the regulator and the public broadcaster be sourced? And what mechanism will you put in place to ensure that such funding model is realized?
Okay, so in terms of, I've researched primarily around the funding model of SABC itself, but from what I understand, it has limited funding that is allocated from National Treasury, and that the bulk of this funding comes from advertising, so it's by commercial services division, and then the funding that is by TV licenses. And I think that kind of funding model, from the outside, without having an abundance of information, seems like one that is working, except that the various aspects around commercial services division, the TV licensing division, or aspect of it, is not being realized to the extent that it could be realized. And when it comes to a regulator, because it is in a regulatory position, there has to be, I would say, independence in respect of its funding sources, so that it's not compromised in any way. That would be my comment without knowing completely what the funding structure is.
The last one. I'm sure you are aware that this is not the first time that a board of the CBC is dissolved. If appointed a board member, how do you see yourself doing some other thing different so that Almen must not have reasons to dissolve this board? What is it that you see yourself doing differently to avoid another dissolution?
Again, you know, I really cannot emphasize enough the role of being able to ensure that policies and procedures are followed to the absolute T, and also being able to where there are issues that cannot be resolved at a board level, where you do everything that you can as a board member, working with other board members to resolve either SCN irregularities or putting in place mechanisms to ensure that there aren't irregularities, where all that work has been done, but still you are somehow prevented through changes to the memorandum of incorporation or through political influence from doing that work, then I guess it's outside of the ability of the board to be able to address that, and then seeking the necessary assistance from a committee like this at a very early stage and being able to have the requisite opinions sought and deliberated on and having findings by this committee will be the last port of call as it has been in the past. It's being absolutely aware of what your obligations are as a first point of call, and secondly, when those fail, you've exercised or done everything that you could from your side to then be able to escalate the issue.
Thank you very much. Much
Thank you.
good governance and that is displayed, and once people see that this institution is run in a way that realizes the mandate of the SABC, I think that in itself improves its image. I think that you could look at various programming issues that have been raised by the SABC in the past. There have been huge issues around sports, around certain cultural events, but there not being coverage over certain things. So in terms of image, and it's about how people react to programming, that I would think would advance the image of the SABC. One thing is for sure is that we don't have a public parliamentary channel, either for national legislative processes or provincial. I think that is essential to being able to ensure the public understands what's being done here, as well as in the provinces, and improving the image of the SABC as well, because it shows that the SABC is not inclusive. It's trying to address needs that are broader than just, for example, entertainment.
Thank you. Anyone? Want to follow up? Okay. It looks like none. Hopefully none of the covers, because I have two minutes. But Ms. Govindsamy, I'm sure and I hope you are aware of the Broadcasting Amendment Bill. And if you are aware, what would be your area of interest in amending that bill?
So I think the main area of interest is to ensure that any vagueness or any space that there currently is for misinterpretation of the Broadcasting Act in relation to other pieces of legislation and that the mandate of the SABC and the board is made clear. I think that is essential. It speaks to a number of questions that have been asked me today around what would you do in the event of a particular interference or a particular set of eventualities. And I think being able to have clarity around that would greatly strengthen the work that the board does. I know that the amendments are also aimed at creating a nominations committee around the appointment of future board members, around ensuring that there is adequate succession planning, and those are all important aspects of the role.
Thank you very much. I think that members must thank them in this comment. We have, but you were saying. You are now excused. We'll do whatever we want to do about you and inform you. Thank you very much. Oh, yes. In the last minute, here are the members, because I think that is important. Here are the members. Do you want to ask any questions from the members? And any member will respond.
I think the question that I did have prepared was around the role of the advisory committee. Jackie is made up of people from programming, it's around policy advice. And I wasn't absolutely sure on how this committee was constituted and whether that kind of advice focused through the board, because I agree that, you know, board members may not have you know, the kind of expertise that people in the media who work directly in it would have, but I understand they share that expertise, and I'm not sure how that is shared and how that committee is comprised.
Yeah, well, that's the responsibility of the minister. I don't know if I have to care about the advisory board.
It's
that of the minister. So the committee doesn't have an advisory board. That's the response. It rests with the minister of communication. And if you look at the act, it's the same. I don't know. you seem not to be satisfied.
It was just in the legislation there was a reference to a committee that is comprised of like various, I think it's section 12 or section 8. And that is the committee that I was trying to understand how it functions. Because it seems like it was a really important part of
the. No, if you go to the Act.
Okay,
there
is that one.
It's there, it's just a quote for that one.
Okay.
It's not to the means that I would say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for marketing it up. Can we, when she's grown out, get another candidate? Or should we do the 5 minutes?
Thank you.
Thank you.
If there are things that you need to tell us, so that we are not shocked, tell us. But I know that the names were put into public scrutiny. And we were happy that there is nothing about you, because that was done by the public. Over to you, sir. Just introduce yourself and tell us more. Thank you very much. You have 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I'm the good and first character. I'm interested in this matter based on my exposure to the media over a number of years. I've been on both sides of the coin as a public relations director of a university which had to respond to media inquiries and to position my institution in a manner which will sustain a good reputation. I also had the privilege of establishing a community radio station wherein I was then able to manage the affairs of a community radio station. I have done a lot of things in the community, and during that time I have accumulated knowledge and experience which I reckon can put me in good stead in providing service to our South Africa. I subscribe to the adage that says service is the price one pays for the privilege of life. I think I've been been, to a certain extent, privileged enough to now, at my age, and being very much available to plow back instead of going to the grave with the knowledge I have. So the issue of SABC, as it has been a very topical issue, has touched all corners of South Africa and also has touched me. The issue of governance, wherein I also realized that one important item that is individually omitted is that of leadership. I think I have provided leadership in various aspects. Strong leadership is also very important. It's not just a matter of laws. Those laws have to be translated into action, and sometimes power leadership is very, very important. I have been chairperson of a board wherein I was able to navigate between the powerful CEO and a shareholder representative. I know it's not easy, but I've managed to stay through. So I think I can be able to play a role in steering this SABC, which is a national asset, to its rightful place. I thank you.
Thank you very much. You hear members? Can I then start with the honorable Congress?
Mr. Rufus, am I right? Mr. Karim.
The shareholder was government. The shareholder was government. And the CEO that we had appointed was occupying a very important position for Shinja province, being a member of the PC and a spokesperson of the PC. So at times you would find.
Can you explain that? Member?
Of the provincial executive province.
CEO had a political position.
CEO, yes, was a CEO and also a member of the Provincial Executive Committee.
Yes, I just wanted to know the legal complexities of that navigation.
The legal complexity was that when it comes to reporting, the reporting lines, the CEO will report both ways. Would at times report to the premium, report to the organization that deployed him, and report to the MEC, and report to the board. And the board was at some point overlooked, to a point where even the MEC was overlooked. He had to be someone for certain clarification. And myself as a chairperson of the board had to intervene and try to put matters right for the MEC to be able to respond to these principles.
What were your successes in that implementation? I remember my question is from navigating a legal environment in that context of a relationship. What were your achievements?
Yes, firstly, I managed to finish the term with both in place. So the work did continue. Wherever possible, I managed to disarm the conflicts
and minority sports are carried out in
Firstly, it was not Nashville's fund. It was donor fund. Secondly, approval was done by finance, not by my department. So that other director referring to was the director of finance. Thirdly, I think it was just a book entry. At the university, you have what we call a mission of funds. Instead of allocation to be made for a mission of funds, which my daughter qualified, she was entered into for this other fund.
That's the explanation, and that's the explanation now. Honorable Fick.
Morning, Mr. Harris. I'm sure you're aware that this is not the first time that a board of SCDC is dissolved. If appointed a board member, what is it that you see yourself doing differently to avoid another dissolution?
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Yes, it would be a very sad thing for this to happen again and again and again. And it would be very bad if it happens with me being part of it. I've looked at the governance structure. I've noted that the board's authority is not that strong. For instance, the executive directors are appointed by the shareholder in consultation with the board. And I would like to see a situation where the board makes a recommendation instead of just being waiting to be consulted. I've also noted the structure of the executive directors. This one, almost everything has been piled in one division, that of the COO. That makes that division too powerful at the expense of other divisions. And I've also noted that the group chief executive officer has got a long span of control of people who report to him or her, which makes it very difficult to oversee the work of the chief operation officer and that of the chief financial officer. Now, if that is not rearranged, it might also make the chief operation officer very, very powerful to an extent where some board members might feel sidelined or intimidated. So I would like to see that those two things being looked at.
What in your view should be the relationship between the SABC and the regulator, by the regulator referring to it? What is the current state of affairs? And if appointed a board member, in what way your appointment assist in improving this current state of affairs?
The obligation of the Broadcasting Act is encapsulated in the ICASA Act, put into the conditions of the license. four channels. Now, the contract conditions are binding. The contract conditions have to be respected because license renewal is also dependent on that. So as a board, it would be good to have a cordial relationship with the council and take guidance where it is possible and not to risk the relicensing of the corporation.
Thank you very much. Honorable Fonda.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Christopher, for making yourself available. I mean, you serve on 8 boards. You are a director of several companies. Why do you want to serve on the SABC board? You only fight the times given all these responsibilities that you have.
Thank you, Honourable Member. When you look at those boards that you are referring to, some of them came about when I was lazy, when there was nothing to do. Ever since 2009, I was not active. I was retired and not active. And secondly, some of them are mainly having to do with cooperatives, which are not even active, some of them, except one. Except two that are active, I'm waiting on. That is Mutapa Financial Services Cooperative and Mutapa Financial Trading and Services. Those ones are active, the rest are not. I think I have time, except that I just added one board where I'm just an ordinary member. It's just recent. Gal, Gateway Port of Enugu. It's just recent.
What is another man of me being a board member?
Yes.
Speaking of your directorship, you're a director of a company called Central Lake Trading that you reviewed in your CV. What does your role entail at Central Lake Trading?
Thank you once more. Central Lake Trading is a company that seeks to do property development. It hasn't started trading. It is looking for an opportunity to acquire land in order to do a mixed development. It hasn't started functioning.
The same Central Lake Trading that trades as Empire Technologies, that's the same company.
No, it's not the same.
Alright, thank you. Just that there is another company called Central Lake Trading that has been involved in some dubious business, but I appreciate that maybe it's the same name, but yours is not the one that trades as Empire Technologies. It's not the same company.
Yes.
And you're very sure that it's not.
Yes.
And then you're a councillor in Bembe. You don't disclose in your CV which political party. Which political party are you councillor for?
Do I have to disclose?
Very much so.
The question is which political party? Is that the question?
African National Congress.
Thank you.
Honourable Davis?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Mr. Kavita for making himself available. I have three questions. I'll ask them one at once, and you can respond to each question in turn. Is that okay with you, sir?
Just one of them, Mr. Chair.
You are currently a director of a company called DR Kavita Communications. Now, as an SABC board member, you will be part of a leadership team of a broadcaster with unparalleled reach in South Africa, reaching more audiences than any other media institution. Do you think that being a member member of the SABC board and being a director of a communications company constitutes a conflict of interest? And if so, how would you manage that conflict of interest? That's my first question. My second question relates to an entry on your CV, which states that you are currently a commissioner at the Broadcasting Complaints Commission. Now, we all know that the Broadcasting Complaints Commission is mandated to investigate complaints against the SABC, amongst other broadcasting companies. So if you are appointed to the SABC board, you may find yourself having to investigate yourself, in effect. So this is a clear conflict of interest. Would you therefore resign as a commissioner at the Broadcasting Complaints Commission if you were appointed to the SABC board? And then my last question is a follow-up on Honourable Darko's question, and that relates to the controversy around your previous tenure as the publicity director at the University of Venda. PricewaterhouseCoopers found that you did indeed channel 70,000 rand worth of donor money to your daughter. That was covered in a PricewaterhouseCoopers report that was published in the media. So can you just confirm to us here, did you channel the money to your daughter or not? And if you didn't, why did you resign from your position before the university could conduct a hearing into the allegations? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me start with the last one. The 70,000 referred to the two directors, not to one. So the money that has been allocated to my daughter was 32,000, not 70,000. Secondly, price water out was...
And then the other 32,000?
The other director.
Another director.
Yes, yes, yes. With me it was 32,000. Now, the findings of price was a report which was brought to me. I've reflected that in the statement, was that public relations made a request and finance approved. Now, when it comes to the charges brought against me, that matter was not part of the charges. Something else came up. And then, when we went for a hearing, I was made an offer for settlement, which I said, no, I'll have to think about it. After some time, I felt, no, what is the point of saving an employer who wants you to settle? So I agreed to settle. But then when it came to terms of settlement, we differed, and the whole thing collapsed. And then the university proceeds with the DC. I felt, no, I cannot waste my time. I have a design. Now, when it comes to the commissioner matter, it's true. It's automatic. It's automatic. As soon as I can be made an open accept, it's automatic that I resign from being a commissioner. It's stated, we have been told that. Now, on the issue of the director of communication, this is one of the companies I established as soon as I got out of the university, which for several years has not been operating. So I do not foresee a conflict of interest because I will deregister the company. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matis.
No, I'm done. board member. Now, in this regard, in my own opinion, there is a problem. What is given here, what is said or purported that you have done, now I understand that you, in quote, never guilty until you are so proven. I think here there is a problem. Kindly respond to that. You are going to add the 4,000 workers and this other group of members of the board, etc. There is a major problem or point of integrity. Now, given your past, given the present, how are you going to deal with that present?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. You know, integrity, as you point out, is not static. Doesn't mean one guilty will be for life. It's not static. The way you are putting on that is not equal to the way that others put. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here where I am, getting appointed to some activities. I have presented myself to this committee to say, here I am. I'm available, willing to serve this council. It's not for me to decide whether that integrity relieves me of that supposed duty. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I have no other questions.
Thank you very much. If I can come back for the 5 minutes. I can start with the Honourable Sunday if you have a question. Are you okay?
No.
Okay. Okay. Honourable Sunday? Do you have a follow-up question? Yeah,
yeah. Thanks,
Jim,
for the opportunity for
follow-up. Yeah, this is now not for life. I like that one.
So if the situation arises where we're approached by a member of the political party, say the ruling party, the ANC, and then they say that they would like to see certain things happen on the SABC board, and given an essence political instruction. What would your response be? Would you say, you know, would you implement that political instruction, or what would your reaction be?
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. During my life of service, I have come across instructions which I did not honor because they were wrong instructions. Ever since I became a commissioner at the DCA, we have trained on how to defend, to deal with issues without fear, favor, or prejudice. How to do things in a credible way. Now, the ANC will realize or be made to realize if the instruction is contrary to the prevailing laws. It's very easy to take instruction, particularly when it's never. But when the going gets tough, you'll find that those who gave it actually are not around.
Thank you very much. Honorable Rousseau, I'm done with that slide.
Thank you.
means to be on the board when you were selected. Lastly, do you think you are a suitable candidate to become a board member of SABC? Can you tell us just a few five things you can contribute to this committee? You are a student or a candidate.
Let me start with the first one. You know, they say 1 billion twice shy. The ethical behavior you are referring to might have been a very minor thing, but this action proved otherwise. And I don't see how can I fail to learn from that error of judgment. Now, sometimes it's better to expect from the one who has been tried and tested on the issue than the one who has never gone through, who might find it easy to do it. So I've learned my lesson. That's why ever since then, not a slight measure or mention on anything I've been involved in has come across.
Thank you very much. Another question?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, I understand the fact that one of us is here because of the fact that there's some boys. In a particular situation, so there was some recommendations that were made by the actual committee that was dealing with the introduction of the establishment of the ministry. If that general first can take us through, on how can we as a person make sure that all that has been the recommendation of the ad hoc committee? Maybe if you can explore that, I think the second question, just if you can allow me. When you spoke earlier on, you raised some complaints on how the arrangement is, who is being appointed by whom. Can you reflect on the act of this legislation that establishes the board? But I hear you put some questions. And lastly, as a learning person, do you think how you have left it is acceptable to the Republic of South Africa and the ordinary person to be looked at as an innocent person? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Yes, I reasonably expect the record file to regard me as an honest person. And then on the issue of the acts and all of this, I want to believe nothing is cast in stone. If indeed that constitutes a governance problem, and we do not want to see SABC board being dissolved, reestablished, if that is the issue, it has to be revisited. It has to be revisited because otherwise it will be a matter of personalities. The structure might go right, but personalities being different, wherein you find one personality dominates and may not want to listen to the guidance of the board because the board did not appoint him or her. So I'm looking at other scenarios and I picked out that, and I want to believe that my submission, it might not be right. Now, I have not heard of the first question.
Thank you very much. Honorable Dr. Asatan, Honorable Kumbe.
I wanted to wrap up on the navigation between the MEC and the CEO and say, understanding the legal framework that the chairs for SABC and the current and the same problems we had to deal with, which led to the resolution. The question is, how does it assist your situation if you were to be a member of the board? But you answered a number of questions which made me to ask you this kind of question. Okay, how the matter was handled. Did you send it to me?
My answer to that is this, that the money, this 2000 spoken about, did go into the student account of my daughter.
So I was asking you the other question.
The navigation.
Yeah, take into account the current legal framework of the SABC Act, the chart and everything. How does it assist you if you are to be a member of the board as compared to the previous?
Thank you. That gives me an opportunity to add on the first answer I gave you. Instead of the remission of fees getting into my daughter's account, that money got in, but not twice. There was no double dipping. That's why there was no need to refund. Now, on the issue of navigation, the compact, the shareholder compact, and the MOI provide guidance. That is also a provision where the board, on matters that are not included in the MOI or in the Corporate Act, could make rules, as to how they can govern the SABC. So within that scope, it is possible to create such a rule and release that rule and have it recorded and published.
Thank you very much. Not that time. This is an interview, and we work on that. SABC is in the process of reviewing the electoral policy. I hope you are aware of that, and if you are, is the process on track? And in your view, is this participatory? Is this a participatory process? If you know, then you can explain.
The process is on track. SABC having to provide public broadcasting service means it has to open up for the public to make inputs, just like this process. The editorial policy has been a piece of controversy. Now, for the SABC going to the public to make input, it's a good thing, and the progress of that, and yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harizu. Here are the members, they have asked questions. Do you have any questions to ask them? Thank you very much. You will hear from Parliament as you did when they called you to the interview. But thanks very much for your participation.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you. Can you call the